Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Commander Rob Hansen, Nancy Hansen, and Dr. Paul Hall in Raising Expectations.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're sure glad you're here tonight. We can see everybody, so we hope you can see us, because that's going to make it a lot more interesting. Boy, have we got a wonderful, fun time stored for you today. And you know, Raising Expectations is a show made up of a great team of people. As you already know, today we have, following the story that we always do, faith, freedom, family, finances, and tonight is fun because it's vacation. So I wore my shirt that if I wash it really good, it'll grow the same flowers next time. It's going to be a great time tonight. I hope you'll be with us for the program. Also, I want you to know our co-hosts are Dr. Paul Hall, who's a theologian and a pastor, Commander Rob and Nancy Hansen. Rob, as you know, is a former Top Gun pilot, trainer, and leader, and Nancy is his commander. So it's really a great setup. Dr. Craig and Stephanie Thayer. Stephanie's not with us tonight. She's doing another great work with Scouts, but we have Dr. Craig Thayer with us, and it's great to have him with us. His nickname is Tank. You can remember that. It's a great nickname for him. Also, tonight, we're excited to share with you, and in just a moment, I'm going to let Rob and Nancy share about him. I got to meet Tom last week, and Tom Siglia, who is a special effects expert on the ins and outs of making movies and television memorable. Tom knows how to blow things up. It's really exciting. Where do you meet this man? I just called him, and I think he is my favorite Italian. So it's really great to have Tom. Tom, we're so glad you're with us. We've been looking forward to having you with us. And Nancy and Rob, tell them a little bit about Tom a little more. We're just excited to have him.
Well, we are. And I am I'm thinking, you know, throughout history, we've seen many famous names, such as, you know, Alexander the Great, Suleiman the Magnificent, Robert the Bruce, which I still don't know what that means, really. Boleslaw the Brave, which is another one of those tributes. Lots of greats. Cyrus the Great, Canute the Great, Catherine the Great. My personal favorite is Vlad the Impaler. And my second favorite is Omar the Tent Maker. But I'm thinking that our special guest tonight should be presented as Tom the Exploder.
Amen.
Thank you, Uncle Ron. I appreciate that.
Tom, it's a pleasure, sir. Now, I believe Miss Nancy may have a couple kind words.
I do, and welcome to our show, Tom. And I have a couple of questions for you. I would like to know, everybody would like to know, how did you decide to get into this special effects business, and what does it take to get into that business?
Why did I decide to get into it? Well, I kind of decided to get into it because of the money, number one, but also the different kind of things that we do on a daily basis. Everything is different. So I didn't really quite understand the whole concept of special effects before I got into it. It was, you might want to consider it as a glorified labor in the beginning. And then eventually you get handed a piece of wire where they'll tell you, hey, you can go connect this to that thing over there. And then this thing goes to that thing. But you have to wait. You have to sit there and wait. So long and the short, it was a long experience of learning and listening and being patient to move up in the business. What was the other question?
Well, the second question was, how did you get into it? And, you know,
I was pretty fortunate. I actually have a brother that's in the business. So I actually asked my brother for an opportunity. And he actually gave me the opportunity, my brother Frank. And he gave me that opportunity, and I kind of went running with it. So it was a challenge. I had a lot of experience in other things, other fields, like mechanics and doing woodwork and stuff like that. So it was a challenge to kind of bounce into something that I had no idea what it was. But it was enlightening and rewarding at the same time. And then the kind of the money, you might say, followed with it. And it was just a pleasure to do it. A reward in every aspect. And by being in the business really made me think about certain things and about how safe we have to be amongst all these actors that are in the field as well. We're the type of people that can't hurt anybody. So we have to make it look like it hurt them, but we can't hurt them. So it's a challenge in every aspect of what we do and fun at the same time, but also a little nerve-wracking at the same time. And now with this COVID thing going on, it makes it even more challenging because we can't see anybody's faces.
Yeah. So, Tom, when you were growing up, and again, I'm kind of thinking back to my, high school days, you go to your high school guidance counselor, and he's looking at you and saying, Tom, I think you have a promising future in the high explosives industry. It's probably not how that happened. I mean, what got you from whatever you wanted to do when you wanted to grow up as a kid to where you ended up besides your brother? I'm kind of interested in how, people think they want to be, a doctor, an astronaut, a fireman, a policeman, and we all end up not being any of those things and ending up being something else. But how does that work when you're going, through high school and you're figuring out what you want to be when you grow up, and all of a sudden you stumble into something that I think you love, and that may be the key.
I love what I do. Yeah, I love what I do, guys. It just so happened to just fall in my lap, let's say. It was luck and the grace of God that got me there. I had no idea that I'd be doing what I was doing today. I was on a completely different path as being a mechanic. And being an auto body painter, I was a really good painter and a really good mechanic. So I just kind of fell into it. And it was one of those things where it fell in my lap. And I'm so thankful to my brother and the industry that gave me the opportunity to actually even perform what I do. And it's such a blessing to feel when you go to work and you're sought after and they're looking for you personally. And it's like, how'd you get my number? Because I don't really give my number out. It just so happens that people refer me that have worked with me in the past. And for that experience alone is worth every effort that I put into it.
Sure. And I guess the industry, there's a lot of word of mouth that goes on out there. You didn't grow up in the LA area, though, did you?
I did, actually. I grew up I grew up in Toluca Lake, Studio City.
Okay.
And went to North Hollywood High School. So, yeah, I grew up. I'm from California.
Okay, then.
It's all my brothers and sisters that are from New York, Jamestown. And they came here back in, I'm going to say, the early 60s they came here. And then I was born at the Queen of Angels Hospital. And my sister was born here as well. My younger sister, which is still older than me.
Mm. So this isn't a case where you came from Omaha, Nebraska, and migrated out with your family to LA during the Dust Bowl era or any of that stuff.
I got to be honest with you. It seems like the New Yorkers do better than the Californians do for some reason. It must be the accent. I don't know what it is. It's like they got an accent. It's like everybody, you must be from New York.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. What are you looking at?
So Tom, tell us what you have to go through to be a licensed special effects expert.
Oh boy, it's like boot camp going through the military. Everybody's testing you. Everybody's pushing your buttons. There's so many things that you have to go through. You have to work for several years before five certain guys that are a grade above you, or let's say a card above you, would even consider signing for you. So you have to show that you actually have the ability to work, the ability to listen, and the ability to perform and do things in a safe manner. Because if you don't, then these guys will not sign for you. So you have to get almost like permission from these guys that are have been in the business for a while. So it's a process, but it's three different processes. So you get your three card, which is like a simple three where you can go out and do a campfire. Or you can assist one card basically that does any kind of explosions, any kind of work with doing fire, whether it be a bullet hit, whether it be bullet hits on the car, bullet hits on a house or something like that, or a flamethrower. It's a process. So it took me about 14 years before I actually got my main license to do what I do, to where I can actually say, okay, I can go out on my own and I can do it. But I really, honestly, I felt like it was such a challenge that I really wanted to be ready because it's such a responsibility. It's such a task that comes in to where it's like, we're going to give you explosives and you got to make sure that you're okay with it and you're safe at doing it. Because if you're not, oh boy, there's going to be trouble. And it's not the trouble that's coming from your boss. It's the trouble that's coming from the law enforcement, the fire department, the state fire marshal. Mm-hmm. So I really had to be comfortable with what I do inside and inside mentally in order to do what I do. And I've had the license now for about going on 16 years, 15 years. I made my promotion back at 9/11, which I thought there was no way I was going to get my license because of all the things that were going on with 9/11. And I was just like, there's no way I'm doomed. I'm not going to do what I want to do. And long and short, I made it. We got through it. And then not inherited, but I've also made certain moves to get other licenses to where I can do other things as well.
Fantastic.
So it's mostly on the job training, I guess.
A lot of it's on the job training. And then there's also classes that you can go to. And there's also a test that you have to take. And you really got to be, you have to work with other people. You have to work with certain individuals that have the licenses. You have to prove to them that you're worthy. And let me tell you something, I've been turned down multiple times by certain individuals. We won't name any names, but they turned me down because it wasn't because of me. It was because of the competition. So there's a lot of competition out there, and a lot of guys are very strict and they don't like the competition at all. So it was a challenge, to say the least.
Greg, I think you had a question.
I was going to ask. I mean, it sounds like it's very stringent, like the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, ATF, are involved in licensing, are they?
Absolutely, yes. I have a ATF license as well, which is my federal license, which is a 20, which allows me to possess, ship, receive, mix, and store, to a sense. If as long as I have a state permit, I could store. So it's not easy, but they're watching us. Basically what happens is once you sign that piece of paper, you're giving them a key to your house. And I have to have a business license to where they're allowed to come to my business, which is usually my home office, from 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. That's the ATF. So it's like, I had no idea what I was getting myself into, but I'm okay with it because I'm good that way. And I just feel that it's such a opportunity that's given me in the business, but lately we've been kind of shut down for a while. Mm-hmm. So we really haven't been able to perform our duties as, you know, special effects individuals. So I'm just waiting my time. I get to travel here coming up real soon. So I got a couple jobs coming up. So I'm looking forward to those.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's your favorite effect that you're doing?
I'm sorry, Greg. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Paul.
No, that's fine.
I was just asking, what was your favorite effect that you've done and why?
My favorite effect was actually making a tornado. We actually made one of the largest tornadoes ever made, and it was about 60 feet tall. Wow. And that thing took us about 2 to 3 weeks of engineering, and then 3 to 4 weeks of building this thing. And it was so incredible just to see this thing actually work and perform. It was just, it blew me away. I'm like, and we did this. Yeah. So I'll make it real simple, but it was a combination of of taking a helicopter blade, turning the thing upside down, inverting it, having a unit come down to capture that blade and spin on a 5-ton rear end off a big, huge truck that we put a huge 35-foot drive shaft on this thing and then raise it all up on these rock and roll trusses about 75 feet in the air. And then we had to cover this whole thing with shrouds that covered it so that it would suck up the air. And then once we sucked up the air from below, we had to have big, huge fans that would turn the air so it would turn it in a direction that it was a circular direction. So there's so many things, so many variables behind it. And then Mother Nature, there couldn't be any wind. It had to be like less than 3 miles an hour wind wherever we were doing it. So we actually created this tornado, which was for a Volvo commercial.
Yeah. I was thinking the movie Twister.
It was pretty incredible.
With the cow in it? Yeah.
It was pretty incredible.
That's very cool.
That is.
Hey, Paul, you had a thought there, Craig. That's a great
I was. I appreciated Rob's introduction with all the greats. You know, so much of what we see in movie magic and things, there are people behind the scenes, names we'll never know, but. I was just curious, Tom, if you could share with us maybe some of the projects you've worked on in the past, you know, things that we might be familiar with, and that way we can put a face to these wonderful effects that we've seen.
Well, when you go back a little ways, when I first started, I did with my brother, I did Critters 3, 4, and 5, I think it was. Another one called The Lawnmower Man. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of bounced up and went to Alien Resurrection, Showtime, certain things like Dexter, things that I wasn't, there were some projects that I wasn't really comfortable with, like some of the bloody, gorier things, you know, but I did get to work with Sigourney Weaver on Alien Resurrection. And if you guys remember at all, she came out when she was like frozen, they froze her. And she came out with handcuffs and ankle cuffs. And those ankle cuffs and handcuffs were like a 3D dimensional type of handcuff. And that those 3D, I made each and every one of those. And there was only two of them that we made for the actor. Wow. And it took me literally 2 weeks to make those on a mill and a lathe. And I tell you, I didn't know how to work a mill and a lathe, but boy, after that, I was good.
I would imagine, yeah.
But yeah, we do a lot of machine work and stuff like that. A lot of the commercials that you see nowadays, have you guys seen the new Jeep commercial with the Jeep truck? I did that commercial. Mm-hmm. I have an IMDb page, and it's under Tom Seglia, and that shows a lot of the stuff that I do. I have a resume, but I haven't updated it in years. Just bigger, 30 years worth of doing special effects and probably doing about 60 to 150 different ones in a year.
Okay.
So yeah, I tried not to stop working. I tried to keep myself pretty busy, and it was such a challenge not to. So when I grew up in the industry, I had kids. So I lost all their education. I lost everything about my kids growing up. So I pretty much focused on my career, which I probably shouldn't have, but that was the only way to keep them with a roof over their head and food on the table. And it was a challenge, but now as they're older and they're adults, I get the blessing of seeing my babies again. Cause that's, you know, great. Work slowed down. I can actually take jobs and leave them. I don't have to do it as much anymore because I'm more the boss, you might say. And that took a while, but you know what? I did it. There was one show that was really kind of rewarding for me too, was the Ten Commandments. And that was a theater show over at the Kodak Theater. That was incredible. I wanted to travel with that one wherever they went, but I couldn't because it shut down. And that I got to do the Burning Bush. I got to do the Column of Fire. So there were so many things on that show that was so unique and so different. Because the theater world is a whole new world, you know, and let's see, I got to do Hansel and Gretel and Pompeia. So there was a couple things that I actually got to do in the theater world as well that was very challenging, but also so different because they have a different way of thinking. You know, it's the theater or nothing. You know, this is the theater, and we're strong-hearted on the theater level, and we don't do anything else but the theater. Think theater. And it's like, if you're missing, if you just walk away for a second, boy, they're on top of you. Where'd you go? You know, what'd you do? You know? So yeah. it's fun stuff, you know, and I learned a lot. I brought my son in the business too a while back. And, you know, he says, well, Dad, you know, you're so strict, you know, this and that and this and that. I said, well, son, you got to understand, there's no room for mistakes in what we do, because mm-hmm. one mistake will hurt somebody or kill somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's the bottom line. We have to make sure that we're on top of our game, and we have to make sure that we're safe at what we do. And we think it out. We plan it out. We write it out as if we're writing our own script. So it's a combination of keeping everybody and the whole crew safe. And they come to me and they ask me, is this safe? And I look at them, I'm like, no, nope, that's not safe. You need to be behind me, 20 feet behind me.
Now, I'm interested in that process too, Tom, about does the idea behind a special effect come from the screenwriters or the director who says, you know, I want to have this go on, or the screenwriter writes something in the screenplay, or
yes,
how does
exactly.
that process work?
The screenwriter will write it, the writer will write it, and then the director will tell you what he wants to see.
Okay.
So you have to interpret what the director is thinking, almost read his mind of what he's thinking, and then perform it. And then usually we like to do is we like to give him a test beforehand, but sometimes they don't have the budget to give you a test. So sometimes mm-hmm. we just have to make it work on the fly. And usually they call me the one take wonder.
That's a compliment.
Yes. Yes, it is. Sir. It really is. It's like, okay, so we got it in one take. They're like, yeah, we can move on. Yeah. And it's a wonderful feeling to get that.
What was the most complicated special effect other than the tornado? I mean, where you may have had a series of different things going on either simultaneously or in sequence, whether it's explosions or bullets or, you know, something like that.
Well, Dexter was kind of complicated because I was doing three different jobs at once. I was running a fan, running a smoke machine, and then making blood things happen all over the place, whether it be filling the pool up with blood or having an actor cut the other actor's neck to make it look like he was bleeding. And then there's other things like certain things like on Swordfish was pretty difficult. We had a crew of probably, I was just a young pup then, but we had a crew of probably 30 to 40 people. There was also another one called Volcano that I worked on, and that was multiple guys. We probably had 100 guys working on that show, and having multiple things going on at different times was just incredible. Fires and flames everywhere, buildings burning down. It's a combination of when you have that kind of work going on, you usually have a big crew with you, mm-hmm. you know, and the crew really handles, they have certain individuals that take certain responsibilities. It's nice to actually pinpoint whatever scene you want to do and try to keep it as minimal as possible, so you don't have all these other things going on, because usually when you have all these things going on, things can happen. Like you're referring, let me just give you an idea. We had this live show go on, and it was like kind of like a live event, so to speak, for a what are those things called? The ones that the kids are playing online, the gamers, right? So we started in this car, and we had a couple explosions go off in a house, and then the car would take off and it would roll down the street, and then we'd have another thing explode. And then we had another car start on fire. And then as the car came around the corner, there was a bus and then two cars that had to basically blow up and flip out of the way of the bus. So they blew up and they flipped out of the way of the bus with a big fireball going off. And then they came around the corner. As they came around the corner, I had a guy with a paintball gun shooting spark hits at this other car, blah, 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 blah. And then as it went on, I had these other explosions going off, these big 5-gallon drums going off, and it all had to happen in one scene, which was probably about less than a minute long. So that was challenging in itself, because to find guys that are confident and competent to do it, is really a challenge when the city was so busy working, where everybody was out working. So I had to find guys out of like anywhere I could find them. I found them, and then I brought in friends, you know, hey, can't just push this button, you know? So it was really a challenge to, yeah, exactly. Here, take this paintball gun and just shoot it at that stick over there, or that wall over there. Just shoot it over there. So it was really challenging because it was, let me tell you, so it was challenging. And then bringing guys out that were guys that you kind of trusted, but you kind of let go because they were stealing your clients, you know? You're like, oh, do I really call this guy back, you know? So that was a challenge in itself, just having dealing with the discipline and dealing with the camaraderie of the people, you know? I mean, the workload is really, I mean, the workload's easy. That's the easy part. It's just finding the competent guys to do it. That's the hard part.
Well, how long does it take to set up a scene like you had just described, where, you know, it's like a 1 minute filming, but it's got to take
2 days.
Hours.
2 days. That was like 2 days. Two days. And then the day of, it took like four. We had a 4 hour window to get it all ready.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd load we'd get everything in place, put all our place, and then we'd wait to the last, like to the day of, and then we'd load our gas. Well, first we'd load our lifters and our gas, and then we'd place the cars on top of the lifters with the big sand lifters that would push the cars up like this and mm-hmm. fly them up in the air. That was a challenge because everything was timed, because we only had a certain window that the gasoline would last before it started melting through the plastic or melting through the lifters, which lifters being the bombs that we'd place in there, and then you'd tape them, but then you'd also put like they'd put them in a plastic bag, but the plastic bag only lasts so long, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a certain window anywhere from like 30 minutes to an hour, and then you're starting to push it. You're like, okay, well, we gotta go. So there's only so much time that we really have to really push that window. And if you know too, cause it won't work, it'll just go poof. Mm-hmm. Nothing will happen.
Has that happened to you before, Tom, where you've set everything up and it's a complicated scene where stuff's supposed to go off in a certain sequence and all of a sudden it fizzles or nothing happens or something like that? Sorry, we're having dog issues here at home right now.
I have dog issues too. Thank God. Honestly, I have to say no. There was one or two things that have happened, but it was out of my hands. Like, look, I had to hire the guy and there was nobody else available. Uh-huh. And I point the finger. It was him. He did it.
I can't
so very minimal mistakes, but, you know, little things. Okay. So yes, let me say this. I was in Cambodia working on a job. Mm-hmm. And is everybody familiar with Buddha? Mm-hmm. Like the, I guess you can call it the God Buddha. There's a God out there named Buddha. I don't know. I believe in Jesus Christ myself and the Spirit, the Holy Spirit and God. That's me.
Yeah.
I was out there and I couldn't believe I ran into Buddha. Buddha, I kid you not, I had three explosions to do. The three explosions I had to do, the first three times I did it, they wouldn't go off right. Number one would go off in number three position. Number two would go off in number one's position. And number three would go off in number one's position. So I, for some reason, and I'm looking at my guys and they're like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I'm looking at them going, it's not me. I swear it's not me. So I reached and I pulled all the three wires back and I said, look, this is number one, this is number two, and this is number three. I said, I want you to hit number one, and I want you to hit number two, and I'll hit number three. And they looked at me like, huh? And I said, yes, you guys do that. So they did it, and we did it. And I said, now do you see what I'm talking about? And they looked at me, and they go, they shook their head like, I don't know what to say, Tom. So actually, they actually apologized to me, but they were still mad at the fact that it was happening. And that we had no control over it, you mm-hmm. know, until I realized that I had to talk to the medic. And I said, hey, medic. What I feel weird, like what's going on? You know, I'm not, things aren't looking right. Things aren't going right for me today. She's like, well, are you a Christian? Are you Catholic? And I said, well, yeah, aren't we all? You know, I'm a little naive, I guess, in that spot, but I'm like, yeah, of course. So it turns out that Buddha was messing with me. And Buddha. It's a true story. I'm not going to lie, sit here and lie, but it was a true story. So I said, okay, great. Good Lord, please watch over us right now. And Buddha, you need to go away. We're just kicking you to the curb, Buddha. God, take over Cincinnati. And he did. He took it over. And the rest of the afternoon, everything worked fine.
Good. So it wasn't like 110 volt to 220 volt conversion issue or anything that you get overseas.
No. Matter of fact, we don't use 120 volt. We only use 12 volt or 24 volt or 36 volt. We stay away from house power because house power just isn't a safe zone for us. And it's literally in the licensing department when you're taking your test. Do you use 120 volt or house power? And it's like, you better say no, or you're not getting your license.
I enjoyed talking with you last week real quickly. Just one quick thought I thought was great. Rob, it was really interesting because we were laughing a little bit about some of the importance of the things you said. The worst word that you never want to hear has got to be oops. You know, you don't want to hear oops, somebody making a mistake. Now, Dr. Thayer, who's a surgeon, he doesn't want to hear oops. Rob doesn't want to hear oops when he's landing on an aircraft carrier. Paul and I, as pastors or teachers, we heard oops lots. It bothers us. But tell them a little bit about what that crowd feels like you shared, when you get it to go just really, really great, and how it was with the actors and others, that response you got. I thought that was awesome. When it goes just right.
Oh, when it goes just right, they actually applaud. They applaud. Yeah. They actually applaud. And you're like, you get this warm, fuzzy feeling. You're kind of you get a little blood flush here. And you're just like, oh, thank you. And they all applaud. And they're just like, you feel like the best thing has ever happened in your life. You're just so proud. But it's a moment that happens, but not often. Normally they say, okay, moving on. Next one, next scene. We're out of here.
Now, you mentioned Sigourney Weaver, Tom. I mean, I'm sure you've met a lot of these stars. I would guess the audience would be very interested in hearing, you know, the people you've met. You don't necessarily have to say whether you like them or not, but you might, if you did like them, maybe bring that part up.
You know. The only real actor I really ever liked was Pierce Brosnan. He was a gem. Just a gem. John Travolta, I met him too. He was a nice guy. I come and I go. I mean, they all kind of look familiar. They all kind of look the same to me. And I don't think about it. Because once you start thinking about it, you're like, can I get your autograph? You know, it's like, you just don't want to go there. You know, it's like the one rule of thumb you just don't want to do. So I just keep it professional. And I walk up to him. I say, thank you very much, sir. Have a nice day. What was the one guy that kind of got mad at me? He got mad at me. He says to me, he goes, hey, you just pinched me. And I looked at him. I go, well, that wasn't me. That was your pants that are too tight. That wasn't me, because I had to put some bullet hits on his chest. And I can't remember what was his name? His brother was a comedian, and he died. The brother died. He's old-time master comedian, great guy, and then his brother's an actor too. Come on, you guys, help me out here. It's been a while.
Hispanic guy.
No, he's
Freddie Prinze.
He was on. No, not Friends. I can't remember. But I've met so many of them. It's like it's an ongoing thing with these actors. Mm-hmm. They try to keep us at bay. You know, and they try to keep us from talking to them too much. And I don't care. It's like, you know, it's just another person. You know, it's like, who are you? Am I supposed to know you?
Yeah.
It's not like I'm being facetious or I'm being an ass. I'm just saying, hey, I'm sorry. I don't watch your program.
And you deal with them like every day. So unlike, you know, somebody in middle America who, you know, may watch a movie or a show, this is an everyday thing for you. I mean, just meeting
it is
working with
it is people. And now with the COVID thing, it's getting really weird because we all have these zones that we have to be in, you know. It's like, so now they're really going to keep us away from them, which to me is like great, because look, just stick me in the corner, I'm good, you know what I mean? Stick baby in the corner, I'm good. I'm like, I'll do whatever you need to do from a distance.
Yeah. That's cool.
Did you got a question, or Craig?
I was just thinking that there was a scene in Braveheart that Mel Gibson's wearing the war paint and he's riding around on his horse firing up the, it was the Irish Army. And he got him so fired up and then they took off and then they did their whole scene and the director goes, you know, the cameras were never rolling. You ever had that kind of problem?
Oh yeah, that happens all the time.
And I can't imagine the stress that you have that everything's got to not only go the right number in order, but on camera, be in the right spot at the right time.
You have to. They have to be ready. That's why we always wait for the camera to be rolling. Once camera's rolling, it's on. You know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes it's happened multiple times in different shows. And it's funny because if we mess up as special effects guys, it's like the biggest sin ever. But when the camera department messes up, it's like, oh, okay, we'll just shoot it over again. Like, no big deal. It's no big deal. It's like, wait a minute. How many minutes did you just lose your production? And I really realized what a dollar is when it comes to filming a movie and what the value of a minute is on a set. Mm-hmm. And it's worth thousands of dollars. It's not like pennies on the minute. It's thousands of dollars a minute. And you think about that, you put that in perspective of how many people are getting paid, how many people are on the show. There could be hundreds of people on the show and every minute counts. And I over the years, I've actually realized that, and it took me a while to realize that, and it made me more of a professional type of human being that says, hey, look, you know, we can't make a mistake. We got to be on it, and we can't make a mistake, and we got to make sure it works the first time. That's why I was always told, hey, you're the one-take wonder guy. It's like, well, you know, I take pride in what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great.
How does that budget part work? I mean, do you get on a contract and you're budgeted a certain amount of money and you're given, or if you need more money to do stuff in special effects, do they allow for, you know, adjusting contracts or anything?
That's a good one. It's a funny question you asked that because budgets are usually meant to be broken in a sense. Yeah. But I tend to keep the budget on budget. And if I don't do the budget on budget, I feel really bad about it because I guess you might say that I like to stay within budget. Whatever budget I give them is what it is. I'm not trying to make extra. I'm not trying to rip you guys off. Look, this is what it's going to take me to do it. And this is what it's going to cost unless you cut out a scene. If you cut out a scene, then I can drop the budget down, but that's up to you guys. I'm not going to make that call. I can't make that call. You have to make the call. Mm-hmm. But this is what it's going to cost per scene, and this is the budget it's going to cost.
Hmm.
And then it's not. I want to give you guys quality, and to make it quality, this is what it's going to cost, and I'm giving you the best. And normally when producers or production managers ask, they usually ask me in a sense of, hey, what this is us, you know, just give me a number real quick and I'll tell, oh, you know, 10 grand. And they're like, oh, okay, we'll put this budget and you can give us a final budget later. And where I don't like to overcharge because I'm making really good money as it is. And it's like, look, I've survived this long and I'm going to survive another 15 years. I'm good. You know what I mean? I don't need to rip you guys off. I'm going to take care of you guys and I'm going to give you what you guys want. And I'm going to give you 110%. I'm not just going to fluff it or just pass it off to somebody else. I'm going to make sure you guys are happy. And if you're not happy, guess what? Let's do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Free of charge.
Is there a union for this,
Tom? Just,
Special Effects Union or something, or United Exploders Union, or whatever, you know, you guys may have.
United Exploders. I see the past.
Yes. That's my dog right there. Yes, sir. Actually, there is a union. There's a guild, and there's the union that I'm in is IATSE 44, and I'm also in another union, which is called Local 33, which does live events, and they also do stage theatrical stuff, like any kind of theater stuff that they do, any kind of like the Emmys Awards, the Grammys, and stuff like that. So, yeah, there's several unions. It just depends on which union you want to get into. There could be a grip, electrical, camera union and producers union, directors union. And it's just, it goes, hey, enough, stop it. That's the puppy. That's the puppy.
Special effects.
Yeah. I'm well aware of that. Yeah.
Great special effect, Tom.
There you go.
Mechanical dog.
Yes, that's my puppy, you guys. She's 100 pounds, and she just wants all the attention, and she likes to mess with the old man. The old man's the Weimaraner. You see him back there? He's hiding. He likes to hide from her. So he hides from her because she's so big. She's such a little bully, you know? I had her when she was this big, you guys. She was this big when I got her. And he used to kind of look at her and kind of cuddle with her a little bit. And then all of a sudden, it's like, now she's 105 pounds. She's still growing. So it's like, all right, I'm done with her. Go away. Sorry about that.
Tom, I'm curious. I've really enjoyed what you've had to share with us. You know, you've obviously had a lot of experience. I always like to kind of probe people's hearts. You know, what are some of the takeaway lessons that you've learned in this career, working in the field that you work in, the type of people that you work around? Are there some takeaways that you've learned that you know that you can pass on to your son, pass on to, you know, just people that cross the path of your life, you know?
Respect everybody and don't trust anybody. You know, it's a tough business out there, and you really got to respect your peers and your elders. Don't take anything for granted. Always make sure that you show up on time. If you're 15 minutes early, you're late. You're on time. If you're a half hour early, you're on time. So there's certain things that when I say don't trust anybody, it's a very competitive world out there. And people are very envious of what you do and how you do it. And they look at that and they think, oh, that's easy. We can do that. You know, that's easy. That's easy to do. Why don't we do it, you know, and save the production money so you don't have to bring this guy out here. So there's a political thing behind that, you know. And when I say trust is a huge word, you know. It's like, in order to trust somebody, you have to really know them. There's a lot of shady people in the business, but then there's also a lot of good people in the business. And I tend to kind of strive to go near the good people, and the bad ones kind of stick out like a sore. You can sense of that sense of who's and what. I had to move out of the city. I couldn't take the whole city in general. I had to get out of the city and move into the mountains, because when I go home, it's like going home to a sanctuary. It's just peaceful and quiet. I don't hear the cars, the helicopters, and sirens and stuff. It seems like running chaos in the city, and it's not me anymore. So I had to kind of calm myself down by moving out of the city, and knowing that there's a lot of people that you can trust. And there's really, honestly, there's no loyalty in the business, none whatsoever. I mean, the only loyalty is your the guys that are working for you and working with you and next to you. But then sometimes you got to be careful with them too. And I don't know if that exists in every business out there, but you know, you just got to be on your toes. You always got to stay on top of things and know who you're dealing with and know what you're saying to people, because there's certain people that will go back and talk bad about you. So. That's been a real lesson for me, because I had to learn the hard way by trusting in people that I really didn't know. But then there were certain people that I did know really well, but was too naive to understand the ability of a narcissistic kind of person or a sociopathic kind of person. So you learn that over the years by trial and error, and by trusting and giving people certain things and trying to hope that it actually didn't. So when I told my son, when you get in this business, and I brought him into the business, I said, look, you know, you really got to stay on top of your people who you talk to on set. You can't just talk to just anybody, and you have to keep to yourself a lot. So Mm-hmm. There's certain things that we do as to keep ourselves kind of in a private world, you know, because we don't want to put ourselves out there like, hey, we got explosives, we do this, we do that. It's more of a private kind of thing because we don't want anybody knowing who we are and what we do and what we have or what we can get a hold of, you know, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of evil people out there that would love to get a hold of certain things that I could possess or that I could get from a certain supplier. And it's like, you know, having that knowledge or having that kind of ability to have certain things that could really harm people is something that has to be taken in consideration.
Sure. Yeah.
It's almost like being a detective or an undercover police officer.
Yeah. I would think that, you know, you have to develop a reputation in your business, and obviously you want a good one.
Yes.
You also have to build, like anything else, you have to have a certain level of integrity. And I think that's something that once I retired from the Navy, I didn't really see a whole lot of integrity out there, but
right, integrity is everything.
Yeah,
and they actually ask that on some of the applications that these guys are asking for upgrades on. They're asking, they're asking, like, what? How's this guy's integrity? Is he have good integrity? Is he okay? Is he somebody that you would rehire or use again or refer? And that's something that's on some of the applications that we have to fill out for some of the guys that are getting their licenses. So that their integrity is everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, also.
So I'm sorry, but I'm like dealing with my dog that just threw up on the ground.
Well, that's common.
She doesn't get grasped much.
All the time in your business,
she doesn't get grasped much.
You have to be able to trust people because lives are in your hands. You don't want anybody to get injured. You have to trust the people that you work with because it's too easy, or I would think that somebody could get injured when you're blowing stuff up and such.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we definitely have to trust the people that are around us. And that's why we always kind of just, we let them do little things. We give them little tasks. You know, here, go get this piece of paper. Go get this form from the production office. And I don't want you to come back till you get it. This is one of the things I gave my son. I said, look, son, do me a favor. Go get this form for the union guy that's over here that we have to get his union paperwork because we're in another state. And I don't want you to come back without it. He came back without it. So I look at that and I think, and I got pissed off, okay? I'm one, I guess you could say I got a little temper on me. And I got a little hot. I got a little heated. And I said, look, man, this is unacceptable. I said, if it was anybody else, I'd fire him. I'd throw him out the door and they'd be gone. And I would never hire him again. I said, it's real simple. All you do is you do what I ask you to do. And it's that simple. I said, that's part of following orders. And that's part of me testing you to see if you can listen and follow these orders. And that's what we do. We give them little tasks. We give them little tasks, little things to do. And it's up to them to either follow through or to fail. Mm-hmm. So, and it was done to me too, multiple times. Certain things were done to me. My brother, perfect example of my brother. My brother told me, do not, for any circumstances, help this man on this job that we're working with. So what does Tom do? It's my first show on Lawnmower Man. I'm like, okay, you know, you're leaving. Ooh, you know, I'm shaking. I'm like, where are you going? You know, are you going to be back soon? And we didn't have cell phones back then. We only had pagers. And I didn't have a pager because I wasn't allowed to have it on set. So he leaves. And the guy comes up to me. The one guy comes up to me that Frank says, don't help him at all. He comes up and says, look, I know your brother's not here. And I just want to tell you, I'll pay you double what he's paying you. And I looked at him, kind of cross-eyed. I'm like, what does that even mean? This is my brother you're talking about. How am I supposed to even react to that? Yeah. He goes, I need you. I need you. The show needs you. The show needs you, Tom. And I'm looking at you. I go, what do you need so bad? I need you to run the gyrosphere. I just need you to hold these little toggles and just run the gyrosphere. That's all you need to do is just do this thing for 5 minutes. For this next scene coming up. And I looked at him, I said, it's for the show? I was a little naive at the time. Excuse me, I was a little ignorant. I was naive, I was ignorant, I was new. I didn't know, I just, and I helped him. And my brother got so mad at me. He was livid with me. And who's to blame him? I can't blame him. You know, I did what he told me not to do. And now somebody tells me that now. No, sorry. I learned my lesson. That's 30 awesome. Years ago. I'll never do that again.
Yeah.
So those are the things that you kind of come across that you, and it's in military or in the doctored field. You just listen to your boss. And it's that simple. Mm-hmm. He tells you not to do something and you don't do it. Yeah. Or you do what he tells you to do. And if you don't do it, and if you do the wrong, there's the door. And, you know, and it's like, and I learned, trust me. I learned.
Tom, we've got about a minute and a half, 90 seconds. Anybody have a question? I know you've just been waiting. This is so interesting. So appreciate you, my friend. Anybody have a minute and a half? Any other question you'd like to run by our friend?
Well, I wanted to ask, you mentioned you were in Cambodia. I'm sure that your work has taken you around the world. What other places or where other places have you been?
Let's see here. Mexico. A lot of places in the States. I haven't been to Canada yet. Costa Rica, Colombia. Let's see, where else? I think that's pretty much about it. It's been so long, but most of the stuff I've done has been in the state of California and Los Angeles because of my family. I was raising my family. I didn't want to leave the state. And if I left the state, my wife would freak out. You know, Las Vegas. I'm on my way to Colorado this coming month. Arizona. Out of the country.
You'll stop by then.
Yeah, I think yes. Yeah, I plan it. If I have time, good. I plan it.
Okay, good.
But it's,
Tom,
it's
we appreciate you so much being with us. Nancy, thanks for sharing him with us, and Rob, and I tell you what, Paul and I spent a lot of time in South America. We were in Texas for school, right, Paul?
Yeah.
Texas, there we go. But
I love Texas.
Yeah, we do too. It's a great, we live in a great nation. You know, we know you're a great man. Your talents are incredible. We know you're a man of great faith. We love your family. You love your country. I know your kids love you because they all work for you now and help you. And it's wonderful to see a man like you. And I tell you what, if I get to pick who I was going to be born, I'd want to be an Italian. Because I think every Italian I've ever known, Rob.
I was lucky. I got to be honest with you guys. I was lucky. It wasn't. I had nothing to do with it. It was my parents.
You just showed up.
I had nothing to do with it. And I wish I spoke Italian. I speak more Spanish than I do Italian, okay?
No
capisce.
Oh, my goodness. Well, folks, listen. We just want you to know you can check back with us on our website and find out more about Tom. We're sure going to have you back with us if you'll come back with us. And you can bring your dogs, too, because we all love them. That's great, especially if you do a show on the Animal Planet. We want to know about that one because they'll be excited about that one, too.
Tom, thanks so much. It was a pleasure, guys.
God bless you and bless your family. And all of you who tuned in tonight, thanks so much for being with us. We're looking forward to seeing you again next week. We'll have Doug Weed, advisor of the President of the United States on the first Bush presidency. So it's going to be a great program. Think about Tom. Hold him up in your prayers. We pray for his safety and all he does. Thanks so much for being with us. On behalf of all of you, thanks for our team. Love you guys. We got the best people in the world on raising expectations. So get in touch with us. Get on our website. Go on your phone. Go on the website and tell us. Tell us things you like. If you tell us things you don't like, we just refer them to Tom. Don't worry. But anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Thanks.
Good.
Yeah, that'll work really good. About 10 seconds. God bless you. God keep you.
God bless you, everybody. I love you.
Thanks, Tom. Great having you here.
Thank you.
You too, everybody. Thank you so much. And God bless everybody.
You too, brother. We'll see you next week on Raising Expectations, Monday night, 6 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock Eastern. God bless.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous. but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.